Imagine trying to cram like 100 years of bloody revolutions, fascist uprisings, and just brutal class warfare into a physical space that is basically, well, no bigger than your laptop screen.
Right. It seems impossible.
It does. I mean, you'd think a century of that kind of heavy, monumental history would require, you know, a towering bronze statue in a city square, or at least a sprawling mural covering the entire side of a building, right?
Yeah.
We just naturally expect the physical size of the art to match the sheer weight of the history it's portraying.
It is a totally natural assumption. I mean, big world-shifting events demand a big canvas.
Exactly.
But that expectation is exactly what makes the piece we are looking at today so incredibly compelling.
Yeah, because today, for this deep dive, we are zeroing in on a single, highly concentrated image that completely shatters that whole sense of scale.
It really does.
We are looking at a 2023 watercolor painting by the artist Jairo Duque. The piece is titled 11 Novecento, and it was painted in Whittier, California, and by December of that same year, it had traveled halfway across the globe to be exhibited at the Art Boxy and Dekulova Gallery in Dubai.
Quite a journey.
Right. And if you were standing in that gallery looking at this piece, you'd probably wonder how a piece of paper that is just 22 by 15 inches manages to hold the intense, crushing weight of 20th century class struggle without literally tearing at the seams.
Which is really the central mystery of the piece. And just to, you know, set the foundation for you, the listener, this painting is actually part of a broader collection by Duque called Trasteo Pintura Artistica.
Right.
And as we dig into the source material today, we're going to be unpacking some incredibly intense political and social themes.
Definitely.
Things like the advance of fascism and deep economic exploitation. But to be perfectly clear right up front, our mission here is to impartially analyze these concepts strictly to understand the artist's visual and conceptual mechanics.
We're looking at the art itself.
Exactly. We aren't here to take a political stance or endorse any kind of ideology. We are just here to decode the raw tension Duque is putting on the paper.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am immediately tripped up by the title.
The 11 Novecento.
Yeah. To really grasp what is happening on this little 22 by 15 inch piece of paper, we actually have to start by looking completely off the canvas.
I do.
The title is a direct reference to Bernardo Bertolucci's famous 1976 film Novecento, or 1900. And if you know anything about that movie, you know it is a massive, sprawling, five-hour-long, multi-generational cinematic epic.
It's huge.
So how do you go from a five-hour film to a single piece of paper?
It's a massive leap. Duque's own notes on his painting state right from the start that he assumed a conscious debt to the choral and symbolic imagery of Bertolucci's film.
Okay.
But he doesn't just copy a scene. He calls his painting an ethical and visual appropriation.
Hold on. Ethical appropriation sounds like a bit of an oxymoron to me.
How's that?
Well, how do you ethically steal from a five-hour movie if you just copy a frame?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't it just become a promotional movie poster?
Right, and that is exactly what he is trying to avoid.
Oh.
A literal copy or a movie poster is just trying to sell you a narrative arc or, you know, a famous actor's face. Ethical appropriation, at least in this context, means Duque is extracting the heavy historical spirit of the film without commodifying it.
Got it. So he's taking the vibe, essentially.
More than the vibe, the core conflict. The film Novecento explores the violent birth of the 20th century in the Italian countryside. It's entirely defined by class struggle.
Right.
You have this intense, visceral conflict between the peasant laborers who are physically working the dirt and the wealthy landowners who control it.
Yeah, the movie is basically this massive pressure cooker. You have these dirt-poor farmers
mm-hmm.
who are suddenly experiencing this massive working-class awakening, but they are squeezed in a terrifying vice grip. On one side, they face deep economic exploitation, and on the other, they are facing down the terrifying, violent advance of fascism.
Right, and that specific vice grip is what Duque calls the conceptual substrate of his watercolor.
The conceptual substrate. I like that.
Yeah, he isn't painting a specific scene from the movie. He is painting the raw tension between land and power. He's visualizing the tension between the collective physical body of the people and the oppressive ideology that's trying to control them.
But how does he do that on one piece of paper?
Well, to do that without falling into the movie poster trap we talked about, he isolates one specific visual element to carry all that historical weight.
Which is?
A compact, diverse human march.
Oh, wow. So instead of trying to paint the entire plot, He just synthesizes all that kinetic energy into a tightly packed multitude of people advancing forward.
Exactly.
Which brings up an immediate question about the people in the painting. Since he chose to compress this epic history into a single static march, who exactly is doing the marching?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because when you look at this crowd, there is no Marvel superhero standing in the middle with a glowing hammer. It's just, well, everybody.
Yes, Duke deliberately eliminated the main character.
Really?
Yeah, he explicitly stated that he wanted to avoid individual heroism entirely. There is no absolute protagonist in this piece. The subject of the painting is the group itself.
And I have to admit, that feels really jarring compared to how we usually consume stories.
Oh, absolutely.
We are so hardwired to look for the hero's journey, you know? Mm-hmm. We want a central figure to focus on, someone to identify with, someone leading the charge. If everyone is the hero, does anyone actually stand out?
It's tough for our modern brains to process.
Right. Is the main character literally just the current of history itself?
What's fascinating here is that you've hit on the exact political and poetic lesson Duke is drawing from the source material.
Oh, really?
Yeah. History, in this view, is not pushed forward by the great famous names we memorize in textbooks. History is pushed forward by anonymous bodies.
The people on the ground.
Exactly. It's driven by the unnamed people who actually do the resisting, who do the physical labor in the fields, who organize, and who ultimately pay the heavy cost of that structural violence.
That makes a lot of sense.
So to highlight one single hero with a spotlight in this painting would be a complete betrayal of how that collective struggle actually happened.
We turn it into a Hollywood story instead of a human story.
Precisely. And he achieves this visual totality by making sure the crowd represents all of society.
It's not just soldiers.
No, this isn't just a military march of able-bodied men. The crowd is composed of women, men, young children, and the elderly.
So literally everyone.
Yes. And when you look closely, each figure has slightly different nuances. The rhythm of their steps varies. The direction of their gaze shifts from person to person.
But they're still together.
Right. Despite those small individual differences, they are all caught in and advancing within the exact same historical current. They are a pueblo en movimiento, a people in motion.
I get that. He's trying to show the gritty, muddy reality of the working class moving together as one massive force.
Yes.
But if that's the goal, I have a massive bone to pick with his technical choices.
Ooh.
Yeah, here's where it gets really interesting. He's depicting a dense, heavy, violent, historical struggle that is rooted in the dirt. So why on earth does he choose watercolor to paint it?
The medium?
Right. It's arguably the most delicate, fluid, almost aristocratic medium out there. It feels like the wrong tool for the job.
It seems counterintuitive at first glance, doesn't it?
Completely.
But the medium itself is actually a profound mechanism for his message. To understand why, we really have to look at the specific materials he used.
Okay, lay it on me.
He painted this on Arch's cold-pressed 640-gram coarse-grain paper using Daniel Smith brand paints.
Okay, stop right there.
Yeah.
To a non-painter, what does 640-gram coarse-grain paper actually mean? Because standard printer paper is what, like 80 grams?
Right, exactly. So yeah. 640-gram paper is incredibly thick. It is basically the thickness of a rigid piece of cardboard. It is made of pure cotton, and the coarse grain means the surface is rough and heavily textured, almost like the dirt roads the peasants in the film walk on.
Oh, that's wild.
Duke used this specific paper because it can take an absolute beating. You can flood it with heavy water, scrub it, layer pigment on it, and it will not warp or buckle.
So the paper itself is resilient.
Yes.
It's absorbing all this heavy, wet punishment without breaking, which perfectly mirrors the resilience of the peasants he's painting.
Exactly. It's a physical metaphor. And then you add the nature of watercolor itself.
Right, the fluid part.
Watercolor requires a delicate, precarious balance between control and loss. You can guide the pigment with your brush, but ultimately you are surrendering to the flow of the water.
You can't micromanage it.
No, you can't. And those Daniel Smith paints are also famous for their granulation. The heavy pigment physically settles into the coarse grain of the paper, creating this gritty, textured look.
So it looks like actual dirt.
Yeah. And Duke worked in transparent layers, intentionally allowing the water to bleed and blur certain contours of the people in the crowd.
I'm trying to picture this. The bleeding effect almost makes it look like a really old faded photograph.
Yes.
Or like trying to remember a vivid dream you had years ago. The emotional weight of the memory is incredibly heavy and distinct. But when you try to actually picture the sharp edges of the faces, They are fuzzy. They sort of melt into the background.
That is the precise effect he was targeting. Duke wanted the piece to look as though memory itself were actively eroding the forms on the paper.
That is so
The
cool.
physical tension between control and loss when painting with water perfectly mimics the extreme fragility of historical memory.
Wow.
We try to hold on to the past, we try to outline it and control the narrative, but time and memory inevitably blur the lines.
That is brilliant. It makes the fragility of the medium the actual point of the piece.
Exactly.
And the way he lights the scene adds to that dreamlike memory escape feeling, too. Like when you look at the painting, there isn't a sun in the top corner casting long, dramatic shadows across the crowd.
No, he intentionally avoided a specific, punctual light source. The scene is bathed in what Duke describes as a diffuse clarity. He calls it a historical light rather than an atmospheric light.
Wait, back up.
Sure.
What is the difference between atmospheric light and historical light in a painting?
Well, if a painter uses atmospheric light, they are establishing a very specific time and place.
Like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Right. You would see harsh shadows from a midday sun or the golden glow of a sunset. It gives you a sense of weather and creates excessive theatrical drama. Think of like a Caravaggio painting with a bright spotlight in a dark room.
Right. Very dramatic, very Hollywood.
Exactly. But historical light is flat, even, and diffuse. It strips away the theatricality entirely.
So it's just raw.
Yes. By removing the dramatic shadows, Dupe forces us to simply read the bodies of the crowd. There are no visual tricks telling you how to feel. It leaves only the stark, unvarnished reality of their presence.
And you really feel the weight of that presence in the colors he uses.
Oh, absolutely.
The people in the foreground, this dense, compact mass of humanity, they're painted almost entirely in earthy tones. You have these rich browns, muted reds, and tans.
Right.
It physically links their bodies to the dirt they are walking on.
Yes, there is a deep, heavy grounding to the figures. They are visually tied to the land they are working and defending.
Yeah.
But what makes that earthy density work so well is the sharp contrast in the background. Behind the marchers, Duke paints the sky in blues and the distant hills in greens.
Which feels totally different from the muddy foreground.
It is. Those cooler, distant colors open up what the artist calls a breathing space.
A breathing space. I like that.
Yeah, it provides a nearly utopian contrast to the heavy, dense human struggle happening in the front of the image. It gives the eye somewhere to rest.
But he doesn't let you rest for long.
No, he definitely doesn't.
The background might give you room to breathe, but the foreground is incredibly confrontational. I mean, we've established this is a people in motion. But where are they actually walking?
Right, toward you.
Exactly. Because of the spatial treatment, they aren't marching horizontally across the paper like a parade you're watching from the sidewalk. They are marching straight out of the frame, directly at you.
Yes. The spatial treatment is what Duke calls frontal and compressed.
Frontal and compressed.
The painting is designed to interpolate the viewer, meaning it actively questions and confronts whoever's looking at it.
So what does this all mean for you? You know, if you were standing in that gallery in Dubai looking at this piece,
It's an intense experience.
it means the room should feel like it's shrinking around you. You cannot just be a passive observer looking at a pretty picture.
Right.
There is no comfortable escape route. By standing in front of this 22-inch piece of paper, you are instantly included in their march. They're walking toward you on your tracks, and you are forced to take a position.
Exactly.
You're either going to join the current or you are standing in their way.
And you can feel that urgency in the physical brushstrokes
Oh,
themselves.
yeah.
If you look closely, Duke wasn't seeking a perfectly clean, polished, photorealistic finish. The brushstrokes are highly visible, and in some places, they are quite abrupt and raw.
It's not a delicate watercolor landscape of a garden, that's for sure.
Not at all. The rough brushwork captures what he calls the urgency of gesture.
Urgency of gesture.
Yeah, it's a roughness that is entirely coherent with the inherent nature of protest that runs through the entire work.
Right.
This isn't just a passive historical document meant to sit quietly in an archive. It is an active, ongoing confrontation.
Which brings a whole new layer of meaning to the title of the broader collection this piece belongs to, Trestio.
Yes. Trestio roughly translates to a transfer, a moving, or a hauling of goods.
Like physical labor.
Exactly. It implies a physical burden, moving something heavy from one place to another.
So in the context of this collection, this watercolor isn't just a picture of the past.
No, it's not.
It is physically hauling, like transferring the pain, the organization, and the symbols of the 20th century Italian peasantry, and just dropping them right into our laps today. It's hauling history into the present tense.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it fundamentally redefines how we are meant to view the modern rights and comforts we enjoy right now.
How so?
Well, the core message Duke is transferring to us is that social conquests are not fixed permanent legacies.
Right.
They are not bronze statues set in stone that will stand forever on their own.
They are incredibly fragile. Because if the history of the 20th century teaches us anything, it's that progress is not a straight, secure line. It can easily be rolled back.
Exactly. The rights we take for granted today, whether that's basic labor rights, human rights, or protections against exploitation, those were paid for by the anonymous, earthy-toned masses of the past.
The unnamed people in this painting.
Yes. And because those rights are just a fragile, ongoing process, they require active defense today.
Wow.
For Duke, Novecento is not just about a century that has already closed its books. It is a loud warning. It is an open, urgent question about the forms of domination and resistance that exist around us right now.
It completely reframes the entire experience of looking at the art.
It really does change everything.
It started out feeling like we were just analyzing a 2023 watercolor on some thick paper. But as we dug in, we traveled back to the cinematic, epic pressure cooker of the 20th century Italian countryside.
We covered a lot of ground.
We really did. We saw how the artist deliberately erased the hero to show us that the anonymous collective crowd is the true engine of history. We saw how the heavy water on the coarse paper physically mimics the eroding, fragile nature of our own memory. And ultimately, we found ourselves standing directly on the tracks of history, with this marching mass of humanity asking us, where do you stand?
It is
still moving right toward us. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. We hope it encourages you to look a little closer and keep questioning the art, the history, and the subtle currents of the world around you.
Keep looking closely.
Because it turns out an entire century of weight, memory, and warning really can fit onto a 22 by 15 inch piece of coarse grain paper.